and welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards, and thrilled that you're here. We're talking type A today. I am excited to even define that and see where I fall in there and how we can improve. That's what this show is all about. It is about self-love in the now, but also those next steps to be our very best potential, whatever that looks like. Our best days are still to come. All those good things. So I'm so happy that you're here. And I'm very excited to welcome today's guest, Erin Stafford. Erin is an award-winning global keynote speaker, a best-selling author, a burnout survivor and expert, hyper-growth business leader and Cambridge social psychologist, also the author of the new book, The Type A Trap, 5 Mindset Shifts to Beat Burnout and Transform Your Life. Erin, you were the head of marketing for the country's largest healthcare staffing company, and you helped the organization grow exponentially. And you now help leaders everywhere identify and break free from the type A trap so they can stay at peak performance for the long haul. I love that. Peak performance for the long haul. Right. And burn bright, not out, which I just referenced before we started to you. I love that phrase, burn bright, not out. And you call yourself a type A poster child, or maybe former type A poster child. And so I am excited to welcome you and to say, what do you define type A as? Like, I think that gets thrown around a lot. And as I was reading this, I was like, I'm excited to just hear her definition of what that would be.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Gosh, that was quite the introduction. I still like, wow, I got a lot to live up to here, folks.
You earned all that. You did all that. That's you. I know. When somebody reads it back to you, you're like, holy shit, did I do all that?
Exhausted just listening to all that. But yes, thank you. I'm excited to be here. Always happy to share this message. I wouldn't say I'm a recovering type A. I'm still very much a type A. I just have better tools to deal with it now and better tools to address it and make sure it's not killing me along the way. There is no like official definition of what a type A personality is, but there are common characteristics that you will see again and again and again. I have a beautiful little chart in my book that can tell you some of these, but it's being like very self-motivated, outgoing, extroverted, competitive, very goal-oriented, achievement-oriented, passionate. A lot of times these are very entrepreneurial people that don't like to do things by the rules. They want to do things their way, how they see it. Controlling, one might say.
Oh,
ask my husband about that.
That hits.
Highly independent, highly focused on goals, workaholic, impatient. We want everything done now. We want it done yesterday. So those are just a few of the common characteristics that we see.
Why is it called type A? Do you know?
So yeah, back in the day. Sorry, I'm just getting over a cold. So I've got.
No, it's all good. Oh, good.
Ongoing phlegm. So back in the day, there were 2 cardiologists. It's so funny how this, I actually tell the story in my book. And so I'm just going to very quickly paraphrase here. But there were 2 cardiologists that were running a practice, and they had chairs in their waiting room, and they needed them reupholstered much quicker than they thought that they should have been reupholstered. And so when the guy came out to like check out the chairs to reupholster them, he found it really interesting because the chairs were wearing in a totally different way than you would normally think that chairs would wear. And he found that they were wearing on the very edge of the seat and also on the hands, like the arms, because people were actually just sitting at the edge of the seat, or they were sitting on like the arms of the chairs. They weren't actually just sitting in the chairs properly like a normal person would sit in a chair. And so they didn't really think much of this at the time, but the cardiologist went on to kind of make this study and realize that there were really 2 types of people in their practice, people that they put in just what they called type A because they had no other category for it. And these were the people that were kind of sitting at the edge of the seat, impatient, highly active, da 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 da. And then they had the type B that were, you know, a little bit more relaxed and calm. And so anyways, they found that like the people that were in the type A category had a much higher propensity to cardiovascular disease and all of these other things. And so there's a whole reason why their study was debunked. First of all, they didn't include any women in the study, but this notion of being a type A stuck, and it all comes from this like random study that these 2 cardiologists did.
That's so random. And they're cardiologists, yeah. Not even, you know, psychologists or whatever. Like,
yeah. So it just sort of stuck, this notion of being a type A, but it was just like a random category because they had type A, type B. Like,
I thought it was like creative. I thought it was like related to alpha or just some sort. I don't know. I thought it was something like, I thought it was short for something, you know, like alpha, beta or something like that. So thank you for explaining that.
That came out in 1976.
So, oh, shit.
Go figure. 70s.
Yeah. The 70s. Well, how did you figure out that you were this, or did you always kind of know, or was it something you looked back on? Cause like when you just listed that, I was like, I really went into this thinking, I don't know if I am or not. Like I can recognize those people who are, and I'm sure you can spot them a mile away. And I feel like I can recognize those, but then I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if that's me. But as you were listing that off, I was like, oh shit. Yeah. I'm so impatient. that's me. And when you look back on all the things I've done, and you know, I've been an active adherent to Al-Anon, which is all about letting go of control. So I was like, it hits in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I feel like I've always been like this. My mom always says I was born mature. I was born independent. I was very much like this. I mean, even back when I remember being a kid and going to the theater with my parents, and my brother and I were old enough to like go to the concession stand by ourselves. But like my brother, who's 2 years older than me, was like too chicken shit to ask for like a Coke or whatever. And he made me do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, come on, get it together. Like, I have always been the person. And I vividly remember this. There was an older gentleman in like that was behind us. And the concession person was like, it was taking their order next. And me, like, I was like, six, maybe. I was like, excuse me, we were here first. Like, totally. Just like little Miss Independent. No. I was first, you know? So mm-hmm. I've just always been very outgoing, very opinionated, very independent. And it's just carried on with me my whole life. And I think, you know, one thing that I think is important to mention is writing this book and studying this over the last few years, I've really done a lot of internal work and really digging to find out, like, where did this come from? Like, why did this start? You know, because I feel like there had to have been a starting point. And I think a lot of it dates back to, and I feel like this is something a lot of people could probably relate to. My brother was like the hot guy. Okay. He was like the guy that every girl was in love with, that every guy wanted to be. He dated all the hot chicks in school. Like, he was the guy. I was like his ugly, invisible little sister. Like, nobody was interested in dating me. Let me just tell you that, you know? And so I feel like from an early age in school, felt like I had to achieve more and accomplish more to noticed or to make myself feel good about myself, because I wasn't getting attention in these other ways that are important as a young adolescent, you know. Well, let's be real, they're important all the time. Everyone wants to feel attractive and good about themselves. But
sure,
I think it started like I really obsessed with like accomplishing and achieving. It was like, I'll just out achieve you, I'll outdo you, I'll get better grades, I'll do more, I'll have a better job, I'll make more money. Like, you know, that it became this thing that just sort of continued to feed into my life. And you know, I also just recently finished doing the Hoffman process. I don't know if you are familiar with the Hoffman process, but I also uncovered that this of like being a workaholic, not only did it sort of crystallize in adolescence with like feeling like in competition with my brother and I had to achieve him, but I think now this whole element of being a workaholic, wanting to constantly achieve, doing the Hoffman process really made me realize that it's actually rooted in two things, that neither of which I'm particularly proud of. One is my ego, that it makes me feel good about myself to accomplish more than somebody else, to get a better grade, to have the better job, to get the award, to get the better whatever. Like, it's my ego. And I'm like, ew, I don't want to be that person, but definitely an element of that. And then the other element is really just having sometimes a scarcity mindset of like, there's not enough to go around. I have to keep doing. Otherwise, there won't be enough, you know? And so those are two recent revelations, like, that I've really realized, like, wow, these are kind of underpinnings of this workaholic, go, 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 do, 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 achieve, you know, element of my personality. So lots of layers to this, my friend.
That, well, I mean, it makes total sense. I mean, you know, we're all like looking for our niche and our way to like level the playing field or feel like we're worthy, rather than that innate worthiness, which is a huge work in progress for me as well. You know, really tapping into just innate, just worthy, just being here, just here I am, you know. And then, but we're taught by society, we're seeing it from a young age. And when you're in those formative years, like, and you're looking at a sibling, like, that is, I think that resonates with a lot of people, you know, like, where do I fit? This is my thing. Okay, now I'm worthy in my parents' eyes or in school's eyes or other people's eyes, you know, because I'm doing this, you know. And so you were starting very early on, and I think that probably starts early on for many, many people. I'm sure you've seen it. So, you know, is that's what leads to burnout? Like, I'm sure there's other things that lead to burnout too, but it's that, oh, it's that element. There's a million things, but it's that element of doing. And I mean, I can see it, like, even in parenting or, you know, whatever category you want to list it in, whether it's work or it's just whatever we're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and burnout can come in so many different ways. And I always talk about this when I do my keynotes that, you know, when we start to gain weight, like, our pants are a little bit tighter, or that jacket's just like a little bit tighter in the arms, or you can't really button it that well. And it's like noticeable that you're starting to gain weight. So it's like, okay, dial back the booze, you know, maybe have the salad instead of the fries, like, take the stairs, do you like get it together. And so it's kind of obvious. We know when we're starting to put on a little bit of weight. But with burnout, it's not as obvious, because so much of it just creeps up on us and we don't realize that we're in it until it's too late. And these can be really small things, like unnecessary road rage. You know, I'm from Southern California. Ooh. So, like, if you don't start your car the second that that light turns green, I'm giving you the, like, courtesy honk, like, come on, lady, move it along here, folks. You know, like, I'm constantly getting irate at people if they're driving too slow, even if I'm, like, not even in a hurry. And so there's little things like that where you're like, okay, why am I getting so upset about this? Like, I'm clearly on, like, my edge, you know, or just really not sleeping well. I think sleep is such an important piece of the puzzle. If you are awake every night in the middle of the night with your mind just racing, like, we got some work to do, you know?
I think so many, I've talked to other people, and so many times I just did a couple episodes on, like, menopause and sugar, and, like, there's so many factors, right? There's so many things that could be, but relating it to burnout hadn't really occurred to me. And that's so interesting, especially with road rage. And you called it, I think on your website or maybe in one of your videos, you called it burnout, a cunning thief.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very interesting to look at it like, oh, you know, and really with sugar, with hormones and all those things, it was like, comes back to taking time for yourself. And I think that burnout does too, right? A lot of it comes back to that worthiness, taking time for yourself. But that's, these symptoms are so interesting.
Yeah. We're stretched too thin. We get stretched way too thin and we burn out. We are trying to be all things to all people. We're trying to prove ourselves. We're trying to do all the things all at once. And
oh God, I'm such a Virgo perfectionist too. I'm like this Virgo perfectionist. And yesterday we had a job interview with someone, and Justin and I did. And I wanted to show like how on top of things I am and how I get everything done. You know, like I'm falling prey to this even just like in the littlest ways, right? And so I get in the car to take my daughter to school. She's like, can you pick up my friend Kimberly? Can you? And then I didn't have gas and I had to pee. And like, I mean, like it was just, and I was like, there's
all
no
the
way.
Things. Yeah.
All the things. I organized the interview. I set things up. I did all this stuff. And then I couldn't even get there on time. Then I tried to log into Google Meet in my car and it wouldn't work. And it's just like this like avalanche of shit. And I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
And And so I didn't look like this professional, like on top of it mom who does everything like I wanted to. And I beat myself up about that. And then some guy on the road gave me the finger and I was like, well, shit, I just, and that made me feel bad. And so I really like felt like I failed and I felt stretched so thin and I put it all on myself. Aaron, nobody was keeping score. Justin didn't care. The guy wasn't even the right fit really for the job. And I mean, like, no one cared. And I put all this on myself. I got home. Justin's still on the call. I'm pacing. I was like pacing and I had to catch my breath and get a hold of myself. Like that's how out of sorts I was. Let's talk about stretch thin. Yeah. And I'm like, that's what it is, right? That those are the signs.
Well, that's definitely some of it, you know, and it all adds up. And it's, you know, I liken preventing and overcoming burnout quite often to diet and exercise, because I feel like we understand diet and exercise. We know that we can't just work out and exercise and eat really well one day and all of a sudden we're in great shape and we never have to do anything again. No.
So unfortunate, but true.
Yes. I know, right?
Yeah.
Constant. It's every day. It's choices that we have to make every single day for the rest of our lives to stay healthy. You know, it's not one thing. It's not just like, oh, just take your vitamins in the morning and everything will be great. No, you still got to eat well. You still got to exercise. You still got to keep your blood pressure down. You still got all the things, you know, and preventing and overcoming burnout is no different. There is no silver bullet. There is no one thing that's going to solve everyone's problem. It's not just like, oh, just meditate every morning and you're going to be in great shape. That will help, but that's not going to solve everything, you know? And so small, intentional choices every single day that we need to make for the rest of our lives, you know? And I notice now that I have kind of a toolkit that I can use, I notice I'm so much better at one, thing when I'm starting to feel a little flustered, feel a little stretched thin, feel a little short-tempered, you know, like my poor husband gets the brunt of it because it's always the people that we live with that we're like so short and snappy with sometimes, you know, you're like, okay, maybe I need to dial it back a little bit. Now that I have a toolkit though, I'm much more aware when I am feeling a little stretched thin. And I'm also just better at those tools to get me out of that place before I dive so deep in that it really takes a lot of effort, because ultimately there's no amount of yoga or like green juice you can drink that's going to get you out of burnout. Like you actually have to change your mindset. You have to change your behaviors. You have to redefine success often. Like a lot more to this than just, oh, I'll just go get acupuncture and everything will be fine.
Well, and it's affecting your nervous system, right? So, I mean, like you, even if you are doing those things every day, it's like a deeper physical, isn't there a deeper physical aspect to it as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it affects our blood pressure. It affects our sleep. It can, you know, if you don't address burnout, it can lead to like kidney stones, gallstones. Like I know so many type A, very successful people who've been diagnosed with cancer in the last few years, you know? And
yeah.
And that's not to say it's just because of burnout, but so much stress on these people in these people's lives that's going unchecked, and it has to materialize somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. I mean, like that's the body keeps the score type thing, right? When we're taxing ourselves, when we are think of something stretched thin. That's such a great example in words, because really that's when it either becomes brittle or snaps or gets holes in it, right? Or something like that.
People, do you know? I mean, I feel like we hear it all the time. I have one of my girlfriends is very successful and she's also a politician, and she gets kidney stones regularly. Yeah. And she always says, like, I know when I get kidney stones that, like, that is my body telling me I got to change some things. And it's like, why does it take us getting the kidney stones or having the heart attack or having the miscarriage before we, like, get ourselves in check? But sadly, like, that's just society. That tends to be what happens, is we wait until we have something that we literally can't ignore. And then we have to start making some changes.
But that's your mission.
My goal is to
that's your mission.
Yeah, my goal is to hopefully help people make those changes before we get to that point.
Perfect segue, perfect lead in. So let's talk about how we recognize those. Like yesterday I did, and I knew I'd had too much caffeine. I knew that I hadn't even taken the steps before 9 a.m., right? I had too much caffeine. I had not meditated. I had looked at my phone first thing. Like just the little things that I know to do that I talk about on this show that I'm still like sometimes
struggle.
Maybe not struggle, but I know better. You know what I know? But I can recognize those things, right? I am trained enough to go like, ah, you know what? I'm going to do better tomorrow, or I catch it and I'm able to do the right things, maybe hop in the sauna, maybe get some exercise, whatever it is. So how do we recognize those signs? If somebody's like, oh shit, I feel like I'm in that, like where do we start? And then what are our mindset shifts as we move forward?
So I'm going to talk through some of the warning signs, but I have a full burnout assessment that's free to download on my website. So I can put that up at the end, or it's just erinstafford.com. I have a resource page. You just put your information in and you can access like a bunch of downloads.
Oh, good. I saw that resource page. I'm going to put it in the show notes so everybody can go have their burnout assessment. That's so cool.
There's like a whole assessment on there that measures 6 different areas of your life. It should only take about 5-10 minutes to fill out. So that's much more obviously in depth, but some of the things that we can think through like health, you know, whether it's trouble sleeping, racing thoughts, anxiety, infertility, irritability, depression, bloating, like so many of us process our stress in our stomach and our guts. You know, you hear, I feel like now it's so popular to talk about gut health, like everyone's
second
talking
brain,
about gut health,
right? Your second brain. Yeah,
it's true. Like if you are bloated or you're not going to the bathroom regularly or you're going to the bathroom too much and like, you know, like so many of these things are stress and that we are just processing in our guts. And I know, like I said earlier, sleep is a huge deal for me. If I am waking up with racing thoughts in the middle of the night, I know that I'm too stressed out. There's too much going on. I've got to reevaluate and figure something out because this is not like ideal. At work, this can look like zoning out during conference calls or, you know, just aimlessly scrolling Amazon or Instagram, buying more shit you certainly don't need during conference calls, or what I like to call the mouse jiggle, you know, when you're like at your desk and you're there, but you're not really there. So you just sort of like jiggle your mouse every now and then to make sure it looks like you're active on Teams or Slack or like whatever your company's using. That I was like the queen of that. Or, you know, when you get like group emails, you know, with the emails where there's like 10 people on the email and you're just like, you know what, someone else will deal with this. Like there's 10 people on this email. I don't need to respond. Someone else will deal with it. Or what I would do is like just forward emails on to the people on my team, never to think about them again. I always say like I wasn't delegating. I was abdicating. I was just straight up forwarding them on and being like, great. Someone else is dealing with it now. Not my problem.
Wow. No problem.
But
wow.
Like, these are some of the warning signs, you know, or like with your faith or your spirituality, feeling hopeless. I mean, depending on what people believe in, like feeling hopeless, feeling like you've been let down, feeling like your spiritual guide doesn't have your back anymore, you know, isolating yourself from your spiritual community. Like if that's important to you, you know, why are you resigning and why are you retreating? Whether it's family and friends, you know, sabotaging relationships, picking fights, being hypersensitive. You know, I know when I feel like I'm low, I become super sensitive. Anything somebody says offends me and frustrates me when normally maybe it wouldn't, but it's because I feel depleted. I'm stretched too thin. finances, it could be spending money frivolously, you know, again, buying stuff on Amazon or off of Instagram to make yourself feel better. It's like that little dopamine hit of like, oh, that's a cute little pencil case, or, oh, I need that eyeshadow. Like, no, you don't need it, you know, but like we just keep buying more crap because it makes us feel good for that moment, or buying that coffee because it's that little hit every morning that makes us feel good because we're going into our cute coffee shop. But like, you're just spending money frivolously. Or if you look at like the category of fun, like maybe just nothing seems fun anymore. All of the things that you used to do that brought you joy, they're not bringing you joy anymore. And you're just sort of disassociating from those things that bring you joy. Maybe you're unable to relax. Maybe you're envious of people that are doing things that you feel like you don't get to do. Abandoning your hobbies. I mean, these are just a few of the like things that I have on the assessment, but it really dives deep into these six different areas. And there's so many ways that this can show up.
Boy, that's a lot of stuff. I don't know if there's anybody that is like, I'm good. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you gotta stay
diligent. Like you really do. This is like something that we can pay a pretty big price for if we don't stay on top of.
We live in a society that pretty much rewards people burning out.
Yeah.
It rewards people burning the candle at both ends. It rewards people that look like they've got it all together. How does she do it all? Well, she doesn't. Let me tell you, there's shit happening in her personal life that she's not talking about. You know, nobody has it all together. And those that look like they have it all together, they're the ones probably struggling the most. They're just not talking about it.
This podcast is sponsored by Wands. Wands creates luxurious pleasure practice tools that help people become more connected to their bodies. They have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, the most gorgeous crystal pleasure wands you've ever seen, free bleed blankets, and my favorites, the trademarked glass cervix wand and the Venus wand, which is their heaviest wand made of stainless steel, and their new ecstatic vibrator. This company is woman-owned and creates products designed to help you become more connected to your body and your pleasure and support the healing of pelvic pain. Get yours today in their always discreet packaging at wands.com. That's wands with two A's, WAANDS.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off or enter the code Amy Edwards at checkout. Again, that's wands, WAANDS.com. The Amy Edwards Show is sponsored in part by Higher Dose. Higher Dose creates wellness tech for everyone with tools, supplements, and body care. And I have 15% off for you with my code MAGIC15. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, and more. I have their infrared pulsed electromagnetic field, or PEMF, mat, which emits electromagnetic waves that mimic natural frequencies found in nature, stimulating and encouraging your body's natural recovery process. It also has 20 pounds of crystals in it and has shown to ease chronic pain, aid in exercise recovery and circulation, deepen your meditations, reduce stress, and improve total body relaxation. I also love their red light face mask. It stimulates collagen, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells, and it's soft and easy to use in store and even travel with. I'm a true fan of these items and more, like their glow serum. So I'm excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there. Or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 for 15% off. HigherDose.com. This podcast is sponsored by The Collective ATX. If you're looking for the best in hair extensions, it's The Collective ATX. They do mine, and I won't go anywhere else. I've tried them all over the years, and finally, I've found what makes my real hair stronger and fuller, and even works with my natural curl. They keep all their extensions in-house, so there's no wait, and they specialize in no damage to your natural hair like traditional hair extension methods. Plus, they're pros at color and covering gray. I have literally never in my life been happier with my color. They were named a top 200 salon by Salon Today in 2023. They've changed my hair journey. Let them change yours. The Collective ATX, link is in the show notes.
We really work and live in a society that rewards this idea, this notion of having it all, of doing it all. And we all want to do that. We strive for that. So many of us, not everyone. Hard. It's hard to keep ourselves in check. And it's hard to stay true to yourself. It's hard to realize, you know what, I'm going to say no to that event, even though it'd be great networking, even though it'd be fun. I'm exhausted. I need to sleep tonight, yeah. You know, and it's just being conscious of what we need individually and realizing that sometimes we just have to say no to certain events and certain things. There's, I always mention, there's this great quote by Coco Chanel that I love, that, you know, she says, before you leave the house, take one thing off, mm-hmm. with talking about accessories, like less is more. Then I always say, before you start your week, take one thing off. Like, is there something in your schedule that you can just take off your plate? Like, maybe this is the week your kids carpool to soccer practice.
Yeah.
Maybe that meeting could actually be a phone call or an email. You know, maybe you've got planned three nights this week already and you're like, this is stressing me out and I haven't even started the week. Like, reschedule one of those things, or better yet, cancel. We always think we can't cancel plans. Like, you are allowed to cancel plans. Like, if that is not something you want to do, say no.
Yeah.
You know, like, we are allowed to say no. We're adults. We can choose where we want to spend our time. And I think so often we get sucked into doing all this crap that we don't want to be doing. Yeah. And it sucks us dry and it burns us out.
And for me, it's that little mental aspect of letting go of this feeling that I need to do it all. Like, I have noticed that, for instance, I've had more on my plate lately when my daughter's here. I'm driving her a lot, like I mentioned, and just a lot going on. And even just saying that kind of makes me like, ew. But I just have had many things. And so I'll make some mistakes along the way, or I've dropped the ball on things that I didn't used to. And I'm like surprised. I literally forgot something the other day. I can't remember what it was, but I was like so surprised at myself. And I had to just be like, sometimes we forget things. You have many things going on and it's okay. And that mental shift is really big for me. Even the canceling, right? When we want to not when we're imagining that we're disappointing someone and we're imagining like, creating a story around it. And I have to let go of those things in order to be like, so what? It's so what, really? Because it does come down to so what? Because so many times we've created this story that we've got to live up to. And that's been a shift for me, right?
Yeah.
Am I making sense there?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. It's redefining what that looks like in your head and giving yourself grace to say, I don't have to do everything perfectly. And the reality is, like, think of how much grace we have for other people when they are late for something, or they forget something, or you have to remind them to follow up on an email and they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, this fell through the cracks. Like, eat that person. Like, oh yeah, I get it. That happens to me all the time. But like, for some reason, when we do it, it's the end of the world and we think we're a failure.
Well, some people don't do that, right? They'll be like, mad about it or something, but so what? That is their problem. Yeah. That's their shit to work through, not yours. And so giving myself grace has been a real work in progress. And it's so nice to relax into once you can make that a consistent habit, right? And I'm not saying that you get lazy about stuff or anything like that, but when those things come up, you're more able to be forgetting of yourself and just you know, allow yourself that space to understand that this is life and it just isn't that big a deal.
One of the
it's mindset, not an email, you know.
One of the mindset shifts that I talk about is releasing the reins. Like, instead of having this controlling everything, because I know I like to be in control of everything, and a lot of type A's do. Instead of like micromanaging and controlling everything, being able to let go, being able to delegate and let other people do things, and also just let go, like release the reins a little bit. Mm-hmm. We don't have to have this massive vice grip on every single aspect of our life, because as we often see again and again and again, sometimes it's when you let go that things actually flow so much easier. And it's hard notion for a lot of like overachievers and workaholics to get their heads around, because most of us have gotten where we are by working our asses off, you know, and sometimes you just have to let go. I mean, I talk about my fertility journey in my book a lot, and I mention it sometimes in my keynotes, but my husband and I tried for years to get pregnant and it just did not happen. I mean, we did so many rounds of IVF and miscarriages, and like we did an egg donor and like just all the things. And little overachiever me was like taking every vitamin under the sun, going to acupuncture twice a week, meditating twice a day, like doing those nutritional IVs, changed my whole diet, was taking the Chinese herbs, like wearing socks and keeping my feet warm, and like traditional Chinese medicine says, and like all of these things. I mean, like if there was an article that mentioned I should be doing something, I did it. I changed my diet, all the things, but like it still wasn't working. And like, this was one of those moments where like, I just had to let go. Like I couldn't work harder to get pregnant. There is literally nothing else I could have done. And I still have never got, I mean, well, I did get pregnant. I mean, I've had miscarriages and stuff, but like, we still don't have a kid. And that's hard for me because there is part of me that's like, okay, I haven't done enough. I haven't worked hard enough. Mm-hmm. There's, what else could I have done? Like, is there a different doctor? Do I need to do a different diet? Do, you know? And at some point I just have to go, you know what? I gotta let this shit go. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. There is physically nothing else I could do. I've done everything by the book. Like, I can't work harder to get pregnant, you know? And like, I think that's hard. That's a hard notion for driven, motivated achievers to understand, because there are some things that you just cannot force. You just have to back up and let go, you know?
How do you relate that experience for you to burnout? Did you burn out on the things you were doing fertility-wise? Did you experience that, you know? And like,
I think my burnout was contributing to the infertility.
I wondered about that too. Like, my next question for you was going to be, what did your burnout look like for you?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been a long road. I feel like I can talk about it now, but it's been a long journey. So if anybody else is on that, I see you and I feel your pain. It's painful. It's hard. It's expensive. It's emotionally exhausting. It's physically exhausting. It's put a huge strain in my marriage. You know, it's a lot. But so I was super burnt out at work. As you mentioned, had this massive job in healthcare. I was the head of marketing for this enormous company. We grew 27x in the time I was there. Yeah. We were doing healthcare staffing. As you can imagine, doing that through the pandemic was very stressful. We were staffing nurses in hospitals all over the country, and it was intense. And, you know, I had a less than ideal work environment, and just a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. At the same time, we had all of this fertility stuff going on. My husband's dad got sick and died. His mom was diagnosed with cancer. We had to put our dog down. I mean, there was one thing after another. What? And all of that was really wreaking havoc in my physical and mental health. And I didn't know how to process all of this. And it was so much happening all at once. And that really led me to burnout. I'd never experienced burnout before. I was always somebody that thought burnout was just some like bullshit excuse that people use when like they couldn't get their life together. I'm like, oh, you're burnt out? Like, wah, go take a nap and get your life together. Like, I was so unsympathetic.
Right.
And then like it happened and I'm like, oh my God, like I said earlier, like there's not enough yoga on the planet to get me out of this. Like I have to really make some changes in my life.
What happened? Like, did you just basically collapse and couldn't get up? I mean, like,
what? No, I just all of a sudden found myself completely disengaged with life. It was like I was having an out of body experience. I was like in my body, but I wasn't there. I was completely mentally numb. I wasn't focusing at work. I was not being executive. I was not doing a good job. My boss actually called me and asked me if I wanted to resign because I was doing such a shitty job at work.
Just checked out of life.
Completely checked out mentally, physically. I remember my girlfriends were in town, bunch of girlfriends for a friend's birthday. And I remember being there and like my body was physically at this birthday event, but I was like, there was no smile on my face. There was nothing happening. I was remember like having conversations, but it felt like someone else was having the conversation. And I am like a very high energy, fun, outgoing like person. So this was like just not me. There must have been probably a good 5 months of me just feeling like a zombie. And I was disconnected from everyone, from work, my friends, my husband, like nothing felt fun. I just was like living in this weird place.
What do you see when you look back on pictures of yourself from that time?
I looked like I was dead inside. Like, wow. I just looked dead. I was dead. I felt dead. And
I had a time like that, like when I was just so, after my second divorce, I was just so down. And I now when I look back at those photos, I can see myself not smiling. I can see myself like just kind of aimless.
There's just like a glaze
wild.
In your eyes. Yeah. And, you know, some people may call it depression. And I think there maybe was a little depression in there, but I really... on my research and what I've studied, I believe it was really truly burnout. I was just stretched so thin in every direction that I had all of these things happening in my personal life at the same time. And it was just like the perfect cluster of, you know, situations that just made me feel so burnt out. And so it took me a long time to claw myself out of that. And it really was a lot of research, talking with people, interviewing other high achievers who had burnt out.
What was the catalyst, though? Like, how did you recognize it enough to go, like, I want out of this? You know what I mean? Like,
because it felt so different than who I am normally. Like, I'm not somebody that just coasts through life, that just takes the easy path, that's like path of least resistance, saunters along, coasts through life. No, like, I'm a very motivated, active, engaged person. And I wasn't that person anymore. And I didn't want to feel like that anymore. And so I took 2 weeks off of work. I could have taken 2 months off because I had been there for so long that I could have taken like a two month leave of absence. But of course I didn't, because I was like, how do I come back from this? I was like, what the hell is my boss going to think? What are my colleagues going to think? What's my team? I had 75 people on my team. I'm like, what's my team going to think? Like, how the hell do you come back from this? And so I didn't, but I did take 2 weeks off and I just stayed home. And I did a transcendental meditation training and learned how to do transcendental meditation. And I got out in nature a lot. I went to therapy. I was exercising. And I was just like telling myself, like, you have to get out of this funk. Like, this is not who you are. This isn't who you want to be. You have to get out of this. And so I just did a lot of soul searching and a lot of research. And that really was like the impetus to starting all the research for my book and for all of this, because I was like, I've never experienced this before. This isn't who I am. This isn't how I want to live my life. I have to get out of this. And going to yoga is not helping. Like, I mean, it helps me feel a little bit better, but like, I really have to change my mindset. And so much of that was like just being able to say no to things, know that like what excites me and what drains me, like what are our energy activators and what are our energy depleters? Like, that's key, because all of these little things add up and they just stretch you thin and suck all the life out of you.
Man, that's such an amazing recognition, and that's such a value in this book, to be able to see the road signs, see the warning signs before you hit that point. I mean, that's huge. Like, at the time, just that example, I don't know if it was burnout or not, but I didn't quite recognize that I wasn't smiling in the pictures, that I was having these things, you know. And like, it took me some time to get the distance, to understand it and to get out of it.
Yeah.
And so people can recognize those, and then what are some of the primary tools that are the easiest to see the light, kind of?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a few things I talk about. One is what I call the Coco Chanel takeoff. So every week.
I love that.
Take one thing off your calendar.
Yes.
Just take one thing off your calendar. Start there. Because here's the thing. If you are an executive with a big fancy job and you've got all these people on your team, or you're running a household and you've got all this stuff on your plate, like, it's not practical that you're all of a sudden overnight going to have some 2-hour morning routine and an evening routine. Like, let's be real. Okay. We're not going to change overnight. So how do we make small little adjustments? Like maybe you just start blocking out an hour for lunch every day. I'm not saying that you take an hour lunch break. I'm saying block it in your calendar so that you don't put other meetings at that time. That was something that really helped me when I had my executive job.
Yeah.
It's like just, I blocked out an hour. I didn't take an hour lunch break, but if I didn't, I would have freaking meetings booked all freaking day. And I was like, time to just think or to be or to go to the toilet. Like, you know, like I just, so I would block those out. I would also block time out on Fridays to like catch up from the week so that I wouldn't get meetings scheduled then. I also have a whole mental health toolkit that's a download on my website that is really helpful. So that I also is like my first place to start. So there's 8 things in there. One is movement. How can we get some movement? I specifically don't call it exercise because that feels like a big commitment. It's like, no, just go walk your dog for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
go
wear whatever you're wearing. Wear whatever you're wearing.
Go jump on the trampoline with your kids, you know? Like, just go get some movement. One of them is like joy. What are those little things that bring you joy? So I love telling this story because my parents are retired and they are living their best life. And they have happy hour every single night together. And I'm convinced this is like the key to their 54-year marriage. They are just drunk every night, but they have happy hour every night. My mom's mantra is if it's four, it's time to pour. And so they're just so cute. And so like, I love calling them during happy hour because I know that my mom's having a glass of wine. My dad's having his martini. And like, I just chit chat with them and it brings me joy. So it's like, what are those small little moments of joy that you can find in your life that you can connect with? And then like connection, like who are those people that just make you happy? Like I have this girlfriend named Jelaine who we went to high school together. Thankfully, she lives really close to me here in San Diego with her boyfriend. And like every time I talk to her, I just feel better. She's funny. She cracks me up. She knows my history. We've got so much like history together. I feel better every time I see her or talk to her. It's like, who are those people in your life that like just make you feel better about yourself? How can you reach out to them? Even if it's a 10-minute phone call when you're driving to the grocery store, like make the time to reach out to those people. You know, what's your community look like? Do you have a good work community? Do you have a community of people that get what you do? We were talking earlier before we started recording about a speaker community named Impact 11 that I'm a part of and Justin's a part of. Like, it's a group of speakers that get what I do and we get each other. And it's just so beautiful to be surrounded by people that get what you do and that are as passionate, as excited about it as you are. So like, how can you find that community for you and whatever you're into? Because people are into some weird shit. And the beauty of the internet is you can find a community of people into whatever the hell you're into, you know? Those are, and another thing is like, what our vision, like what's our vision for our life? So often we can get so trapped on this rat race of just like, wake up, go to work, make dinner, help with homework, do the nighttime routine, go to bed, wake up, do it all over again. And it's like, why are we even working so hard? Like, what the hell is our vision for our life? What do we want? Where do we want to live? What do we want to look like? How do we want to feel? Where do we want to go on vacations? Like, what is the point of all of this work if we don't know where we're going? And I am not talking about making some vision board. Like, if that's your thing, go for it. But I like to just pick a song that makes me feel good and play it. And for those 2 or 3 minutes, I know you love music, you know, for those 2 or 3 minutes, just think about my life and what I want for my life, you know, and try and check in with that every now and then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are just a few of the things that I have on my mental health toolkit, but
no, it's so right. Yeah. Those are amazing and wonderful. And, you know, just, it is about like, I'll catch myself if I am going through the motions and I'm much more self-trained around it now to catch myself and think, that's, I don't want to beat myself up about not getting back to my emails. I'll get to them when I get to them. It's not, it's just not the end of the world. And that's taken, I mean, shit, I'm turning 52 this year, Erin. It's not like it came quickly. These are deeply ingrained things that take time and effort and checklists, because like sometimes the happiest part of my day is making a list. And so, you know, it like, so enjoy your list, like make a better list. And I just, I love that, right? We can find those little ways that are going to elevate our life experience all the time rather than continuing to beat ourselves up. That's kind of one of the things I love about the title of your book is, it is immediately five mindset shifts, right? And so much of it is about that mindset shift. If we can recognize it, like, it's not about going out and exercising. It's about shifting your mindset around it.
100%. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because as doers, we're like, it's easy for us to just put one more thing on the list. Like, oh, exercise. I need to do that now. It's like, no, why do you need to exercise? Because it's nice to go outside. It's nice to get some fresh air. Release the endorphins, feel good about yourself. I don't know about you, but when I'm exercising more, I eat better. And then when I eat better and I exercise more, I actually sleep better. And then when I sleep better, I feel better, you know? So it's this chain reaction. It's not like I need to exercise because I'm fat and I need to lose weight. Like, no, just go move your body for 10 minutes. Just get the blood flowing, you know?
Right. It's that deepest mindset. The deepest mindset, which is what you just said. It's about enjoying life and feeling good. Like, I mean, like that, you know, and when you get down to the root of it, oh, that's where my mindset needs to be. Oh, am I doing those things? No. You know, instead, I'm beating myself up for not completing my list, you know, so which is okay, too. There's nothing wrong with some discipline. But if it's overpowering your enjoyment of life, then it's time to reassess, right?
100%.
Yes. Yes. Oh, Erin, this is so good. I'm so happy that burnout happened to you.
Like, you know, I am doing for me. I am too. I feel like I learned a lot. There's a great book by Dr. Diana Glauberman called The Joy of Burnout. And she talks about that. It's like it can be a real catalyst for change in your life. And it's definitely changed my life. First of all, it's given me a hell of a lot more empathy for people that are burning out, realizing that it's actually real and it will happen. But it's definitely made me reevaluate a lot of the things that I was doing and things that were hurting me ultimately, that now, you know, I've made some serious changes and some lifestyle changes, some mindset changes, and I feel a hell of a lot better for it.
Yeah.
And now that I have those tools.
Yeah. You're able to help others, right? You've written a book. I mean,
yeah.
Congratulations. How long did it take you to write this book? And when did you have the first idea to write it?
Probably took about a year. I feel like that's kind of like a normal response. It probably took me about a year because I was lagging a bit too. Like I would write and then I wouldn't write for like 3 weeks and then I'd write some more. And then I wouldn't write for like 2 weeks. So I definitely, it wasn't like a year of full-time writing. It just was, I would do it in fits and starts. So about a year. I've always wanted to write a book. I feel like I had something to say on the subject. And yeah, it was a cool process. And I'm already starting to like think, ooh, what's book number two going to be? I have some ideas. So there'll be another one at some point.
I bet it helped you so much too, just writing about this thing that was so massive in your life, right?
Yeah. It's cathartic. And I think I write very much like I talk. Like, you do not need to be some scientist or, you know, massively educated person to read this book. It is not written in some complicated way. Like, it's a very straight to the point, what you see is what you get, because that's kind of how I'm like, what the hell do I do tonight when I go home? Like, give me the tools. I don't want just the inspiration. I want the freaking tools. Like, what the hell do I do? I'm stuck. And so it's very much full of very tangible things and tools and tactics that people can put to use immediately.
I love that you just said that. That's me in a nutshell. I'm just like, I don't have time. Can we get to the point, right? Just tell me, what do I need to
do? Just tell me what to do. Yeah. So,
and then there's things in life that don't have instructions and a roadmap. And I'm like, well, shit. Now I just got to surrender. Yeah. Great. Yes. That's a big lesson for me. Letting go. That's that letting go of control, essentially. And really, when you listed off things, and you know, I told you what happened to me yesterday, that thing that came up, like it's that. It just struck me that it's just balance, right? It's just this constant leaning into like, okay, sometimes I'm going to tilt that way. And do you sense that for yourself every now and then? You're like, oops, I'm getting a little out of balance.
Yeah.
And I need to lean back into my mindset, semi-practices and things like that. And I guess I'm saying that for anybody listening that thinks we have it all figured out or you wrote the book on it. Now you've got it down. No. You know, it's that constant like, okay, we're getting a little...
I am constantly using these tools. And what I find is usually, at least for me, it starts showing up when I'm overscheduled and I will just want to say yes to everything because I want to keep moving my career forward and building my speaking business and building my brand and then that, you know? And so I've overscheduled and then I look at my calendar and I'm like, this is exhausting. It's stressing me out. I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time to eat well. I don't have time to do this. Like, I'm overcommitted. And so for me, how it shows up a lot is like just being able to recognize, okay, I have too much shit on my plate this week. What can I cancel? This guy that wants 15 minutes of my time, I'd love to help him. But you know what, buddy? I can help you next month. Like, I don't have time for that right now. Or, you know, I've got too many plans. And as much as I want to see my friends, like, I can't do it this week. Let's do it next week. I have too much on my plate. Just really being ruthless about my schedule and making sure that I have time built in. One thing that I have been better at is, you know, if somebody wanted to make an appointment with me, I would just give them free access to like every possible minute of the day that I'm available. And now I just don't schedule any meetings before 10 a.m. and I don't schedule any meetings after 4 p.m. And that's not to say I'm not working or I'm not available. It's just like, it stresses me out having to get up early and rush and like get to my computer and be there. And like, that's not to say I'm not working before 10 a.m., but I'm working at my pace and my schedule. And it gives me time to like deal with what needs to be dealt with first thing in the morning before I start launching into calls and stuff. And so it's just small little shifts, small little boundaries, small little changes that really add up to a lot.
I hope people will really listen to that because I've talked to other people that have done the same thing. They're like, I don't schedule before 10 a.m. now. And that's a tricky thing to do sometimes because you feel obligated. But if we can let go of that obligation and the story that we're creating around it, I hope people will listen to what you just said because that's so valuable. And I love this setting one thing down a week. I map out my week on Sundays. It's called like gold time or something like that. And so you really like look ahead at the week and I take stock of what's coming up and what I've got going on. And the idea of setting one thing down just feels so good. And
I
that is such a wonderful takeaway and just allowing yourself and giving yourself grace to, it's not a race, you know, it's even though, and no one's,
no one's getting it. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And I don't know why I've created that in my head that I have to be perfect, that I have to, you know, there's being a woman tied up in there and all the other stuff. And the more we can just relax a little bit.
Yeah.
And the easier it gets. How big is humor and laughing at it all to you?
So that's one of my things in my toolkit as well. I didn't get to say all of them, but yeah, laughing is one of my favorite things. Like, it feels so freaking good to just laugh till your cheeks hurt, your stomach hurts, till you pee a little bit. Like, when you're just laughing so hard, it releases endorphins. I love to laugh. I love to make jokes. Like, I love that. And also, it's contagious. I mean, if you watch a video of somebody laughing or smiling huge, you can't help but start laughing as well because they're laughing. And like, it's just this beautiful exchange of humor and fun and happiness. And it feels so good. Yeah, it's a huge part of my day.
And it's such a magnetic thing, you know, like I was looking at Instagram and I saw some guy and like everything he had on his Instagram was so serious. And I was just like, this doesn't call to my soul, you know, and like and like there's something about that just relaxation of laughter and fun. And I think that's probably a pretty good indicator too of burnout. And if you're not laughing, and we addressed smiling and you at that birthday, right? Like those are,
I was just not there. Like my dad always says, there's no there. I wasn't there. There was nothing happening in my soul. I was just a body that showed up to this event. But like, I just felt like I was having a full out-of-body experience.
Had you taken any vacations then? I mean, you said, how do I come back from that when you took the 2 weeks off? Had you been allowing yourself to take a vacation? Because that's such a hole in our society that we don't.
I had.
You know?
I wasn't good about staying offline. I always brought my computer. I always felt obligated to check my emails and stay on top of stuff and see what's happening on Instagram and all the things. I wasn't good about really disconnecting. You know, there's one thing to go on vacation. It's another thing to disconnect. And what does that look like? And I think I've gotten better recently, especially after doing the Hoffman process where you're off the grid for 7 days, no phone, no internet, no television, no nothing. And it actually was so much easier than I thought it was going to be. I didn't miss my phone at all. Part of it was because we were busy all day doing stuff, but I didn't miss it. And so now I'm really trying to be better about staying off my phone and being intentional, because I don't know about you, but like I can get on Instagram and just scroll till the cows come home, you know? And it's like, next thing you know, you're like, oh my God, an hour's gone by and I haven't even posted. I haven't contributed anything to the conversation. I'm just scrolling, you know, like what a waste of time. Yeah.
My trigger is, or my indicator is, when I'm scrolling, is when I start to judge and I start to like have any negative thought, I'm like, oh, there it is. And I just force myself to close it right then. And I'm like, that's good. Yeah. 'Cause that's my little tell when I'm not feeling like joyful for everyone. When I start to go, oh my God, this again, this is annoying. Why is she wearing that or whatever? You know, I'm like, oh, there she blows. So I shut it down.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, like, it's and it's not that easy to do because there's some sort of brain chemical in there that like we kind of enjoy. So it's you know, just those little efforts. Yeah. Well, we are at about an hour and I want to respect your time. Is there anything that we missed today that you really wanted to address or anything that just is on your heart that you feel like reiterating right now?
I feel like we got through a lot today. I think it's really just important to remind people that like, whether you think burnout is going to happen to you or it's not, I think it's really important to think about like what could happen if we don't address it. What's at stake if we don't address it? Like, you know, I don't know what addictions you're hiding. I don't know what life you're living to make someone else happy. I don't know what like goals or dreams you're subsiding because you're trying to live a life that looks good on paper or on the internet, but like what could be at stake with not addressing burnout? You know, I think it's important to really look at both sides of this. It's like, are we living our authentic life? Are we doing what we really want to be doing? And could some of these behaviors and ways that we're spending our time really be eating away at the person we truly want to be? And so I hope that some of these tools are helpful. Obviously, the book is out there with tons of tools in it, but burnout does happen. It will creep up on you, but there are a lot of tools available and you can get through it and you can thrive on the other side. You can burn bright, not out. It's possible.
I love it. And tool number one right now is your new book, The Type A Trap, 5 Mindset Shifts to Beat Burnout and Transform Your Life. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. So order one today. I will put a link in the show notes for sure. And everyone can find you at erinstafford.com or Erin M. Stafford on Instagram. Anything I missed? Anything else?
No, that's it. Obviously on LinkedIn and stuff as well, but I feel like I hang out on Instagram more. But yeah, and then the free resources are also erinstafford.com. You can go to the resources tab. You just put your info in there, and I've got a burnout toolkit, a mental health toolkit, the burnout assessment. I have a really cool activity that you can do if you run a team. So there's all sorts of information on there. Happy to share those with you.
Yes, I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for all you do. This is making lemonade, right? This is like, you know, like you had this to happen and then you turned it around and now you're helping others. And that's just such a beautiful thing to witness.
Thank you.
I know I'm going to use that week tool
the Coco Chanel takeoff.
Take it off. I mean, that one is so awesome. I love it. I may just use it every day, you know, like what can I just take off? It's okay. So thank you so much, Erin. And everybody go, everybody follow Erin, and everything's in the show notes. You can also access her book. And I love those free resources. I mean, a lot of that hit for me. I would be so curious to look at that burnout assessment. That's so cool. So thank you so much for being here. You know, this was so useful. I feel like she was really like talking to me today. So you may feel the same way. I hope so. So thank you so much for being here, because every time you show up, you're just showing up for that, for those little bits that we can take with us and we can use to feel good. That's the mindset shift we're looking for, to feel our best, to know that some of our best days are still to come, and it might even be today. So thank you for being here. Rate, review, subscribe. I'm working to build up my reviews. So if you have anything to say, I would love to hear it in a review. So thank you so much for everything. I love you so much. Till next time.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.